it's hopefully you want him to do well, maybe just not so well that he's going to start commanding a big deal.
I don't think in reality something happens to the baseball without Major League Baseball knowing it.
Kyle Gibson mowed down the Jays in the middle innings on the weekend. You're the real 2017 MVPs.
And welcome to Artificial Turf Wars episode number 72, where no wildcard race is mediocre for us to contend in. I am your host, Greg Wisniewski, and I am joined this week by the one, the only, Nick Dyka. Nick, how's it going?
Hey, Greg. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm pretty good, because I don't pay too much attention to what goes on in Toronto these days. But as it is our job around here, I'm going to focus on the Blue Jays. They are 1-5 since last week. They chose to DFA Nori Aoki. They called up Biagini and tried him starting. They had Brett Anderson starting. We just went through something called the Players Weekend. I'm still not sure what that is, although it looks very flashy. And, of course, we have another catch from Kevin Pillar. But first, we must talk about the record since our last podcast, because that's the only record that matters. 1-5, Nick.
Yeah, it hasn't been a great week for the Blue Jays, but when you're a team that's constructed like the Blue Jays, 1-5 weeks are, I think, to be expected. With injuries and everything the team's been forced to deal with, I mean, Ryan Goins has been batting fifth for this team on some nights, and that's not a great place for Ryan Goins to be batting if you're looking to go 500 or two or three games over 500 in many or any weeks. So it's been tough to swallow, and with the mediocrity of the wild card race, you know, it felt for a second there like maybe, just maybe, the Jays could hang in it, but then they got shut down this weekend by some pretty mediocre Twins pitchers and kind of put a nail into the coffin of their second wild card dreams, as remote as they were.
A lot of people have said, well, if this team goes on a run, and did not consider that the run might be like 2-9.
Yeah, a 10-game losing streak is the run.
It's like, oh, right, yeah, bat, like, if all the stars align the exact wrong way, it can be just as bad as it would be on the other end if they had aligned the right way. So as we record this, the Blue Jays are at the tail end of getting eviscerated by Chris Sale again. Would it be good for them to just take the night off if they're playing Chris Sale?
Well, I was thinking maybe you start Darwin Barney, like, on the mound in a game against Chris Sale. That might be the most entertaining thing for Jays fans still kicking around the Rogers Center at this point in the year. It was a pretty tall order for that lineup to try to take down Chris Sale. I legitimately felt bad watching Miguel Montero try to hit Sale in the fourth inning. He's pretty filthy, and they're not the most gifted hitters in the Jays lineup right now.
Now, we all know that Chris Sale is a gifted strikeout artist, and I got this off of Twitter, I believe, from Richard Griffin, and I don't know if you follow Griff, but he put up an interesting little point. The Jays have seen Chris for 21 innings this year. How many strikeouts would you estimate they had racked up against Mr. Sale?
21 innings, so I didn't see this. I'm going to go 35 strikeouts in 21 innings.
34. You are very, very close, sir.
Oh, is it Price is Right rules, though? Because I don't win if it's Price is Right rules.
I don't think we win any number over like 28 there, basically, if it's the real number. I think we all lose, yes. Really. They've lost by getting shut out. They've lost by hitting a home run that comes up one run short in the ninth. The only game they won, they had to score 10 runs to win it. That's, at some point, it gets embarrassing, doesn't it?
It's not ideal, and it's not the most fun to watch. as much as we've been kind of subjected to bad baseball over this week, I don't think they're as bad as they've played this week. And you know what? If we're looking for a silver lining, with the rosters expanding in a couple days, we'll hopefully get a look at some players that could be interesting moving forward. You know, like Teoscar Hernandez. I'm not too sure what other young outfielders they'll call up, but that's kind of my hope, is that like it might get worse before it gets better, but there might be some, you know, little interesting pieces of gold within the overall pan of dirt to get excited about in September, because you're right, it's not fun to watch most of the time.
Well, I think one of the things that they are panning for is whether or not Joe Biagini can be a starter. He was not sharp in his return to the starting rotation this week, at all.
No.
couple dingers in there, I believe. Do we give Joe time to sort himself out? I mean, there's not much else, I guess, that they can do, but are we hoping that he learns on the job?
I guess my perspective on it is, why not? It is kind of a lost season at this point. I mean, he's only started 12 games this year, and you're right, he hasn't looked good. I don't really think he looked any better on the weekend. But I just say, given that there's really no risk to letting him try to work it out for the rest of the year, see if he can get a little more consistent in his delivery, see if he can kind of get his results a little bit closer to where they were when he started becoming a starter. And if it works out, great. They've got an option for next year. And if not, they've hopefully got a bullpen option for next year. Because whether he's pitching in the bullpen or out of the rotation for the next 40 games doesn't really have any consequence to the Jays. So if there can be some learning done in that time period, I say just shoot for that.
Which brings us to tonight's starter, Brett Anderson, who probably deserved a bit better. He came out in a just dealing ground ball after ground ball after ground ball. Not a lot of hard contact, a couple of strikeouts thrown in there, and then a missed fly ball and some strange defense. As you know, if I follow games generally on Twitter, strange defense seems to come up a whole lot lately between Rafi Lopez, Miguel Montero, and the circus other than Kevin Pillar that's in the outfield. Yeah, I hear that a lot. So,
yeah.
Is Brett Anderson another one of those? I think we've said it before on the pod. Basically, let it ride. If he doesn't blow up, great. Maybe you try and bring him back next year.
Yeah. I mean, he's a pitcher that I think we forget he's had a track record of pretty recent success. You know, he had a good year in 2015 with the Dodgers. You know, he had an ERA under 4 in 180 innings. The most surprising thing about that being he pitched 180 innings. and he broke into the league so young. He's only still 29 years old. So it's like you said, give him a shot, see if anything can happen, and then maybe he's an option to bring him back next year. Unlike Tom Kohler, though, he's a full-on free agent. So they are, if he does do well over the next 4 weeks, they're going to be contending with every other team in baseball to try to bring him, to try to sign him. So it's hopefully you want him to do well, maybe just not so well that he's going to start commanding a big deal. Like when Rich Hill played for Boston a few years ago and he had that great September, and then he parlayed that into a pretty decent little 2-year deal with Oakland. So if the Jays can get him on the cheap, that would be ideal.
I think the Jays can compete in that 2-year, 3-year deal kind of category. Even if, you know, like, cause he's got some warts obviously with the history,
yeah.
But, I think the Jays are highly unlikely to be in the 4 to 6 year deal range for anybody. So I think Brett Anderson is maybe the kind of guy they're going to end up targeting.
Right.
Nori Aoki, we hardly knew you.
Yep. The crown jewel of the Francisco Liriano trade. But yeah, I was pretty surprised to see him get DFA'd, seeing that his slugging percentage is actually higher than Jose Bautista's right now, which is the craziest stat and something I never thought I would utter. Nori Aoki has a slugging percentage higher than Jose Bautista's, but
such as 2017. That's where we end up over and over again.
I was surprised to see him go so quickly, but I guess with, you know, Pierce playing well, and again assuming these young outfielders are going to be coming up in the next couple of weeks, then maybe they just thought the spot would be better used on a young guy who's going to maybe help them next year.
Yeah, I think that's it. I think ultimately there's some other team that can probably use Aoki at least for you know, the next little while, and since he was DFA'd before the playoff roster deadline, maybe there's a shot at actually getting a little bit back for him now that he's, you know, he's shown all year he's been decent. It's just fifth outfielder really isn't even fair to him. I don't know if that's part of it. Is, you know, it's like, well, we can't really play you.
Let's right.
not screw you over, if at all possible.
Yeah, and I also think we heard today that he got his unconditional release. So I don't think the Jays will be getting anything back for him, but he will be free to sign with whoever he wants.
I missed that one. So you're one step ahead of me on the Nori Aoki train. All right, Players Weekend. What was that all about exactly? Do you know?
I mean, I think it was definitely dreamed up by the MLB.com marketing department. And embarrassingly, I kind of bought in. You know, I love them showing the arm patches that where the players could thank somebody in their life who's supported them. And it got me every time when it said, like, mom or dad, or basically they all said mom or dad, but it was no less effective every time I saw it. It was very heartwarming. No, even though it was literally the same two people over and over again for the most part. But so yeah, I thought the patches were really cool. I thought some of the jerseys weren't bad. I know they generally kind of got panned, but I didn't mind the Twins jersey. And even I think they could have done better with the Jays jersey, but kind of like the powder blue, or at least the interpretation of powder blue that the Players Weekend
sky blue
marketers decided to go with. But I think all in all, it wasn't a total wreck, train wreck, or anything like that. And again, when you're watching a 1-5 team, it's these kinds of little things that can sometimes break up the monotony of watching, you know, a Goins Barney middle infield.
I'm all for, you know, sort of mixing it up. I have a problem when things get a little bit forced, like, hey, we're going to put players' nicknames on the back of the jersey. Well, that's a cool idea, because, I mean, you know, if you have a Big Poppy, or, you know, the Train, or, Lefty, or, okay, everybody's got a nickname. Really? What about the people who don't really have nicknames? We've got a nickname for them now.
Like, yeah.
Dude.
Yeah.
Maybe.
And then they get a bad rap too, because then you see their you know, an air quotes nickname, and it's just their name with a Y on the end or something, and people are like, oh, they're not creative. It's like, well, no, they just didn't have a nickname.
Zach Greinke pitched with Greinke on the back of his jersey. Which, of all the players in the majors that you would pick perhaps to not pick a nickname, Zach Greinke is top of my list. It's like, well, that is your nickname. It's just your last name. That's how he rolls.
Oh, he'd be up there for no nickname at all. But no, I think I agree with the nicknames. To me, that was almost the least compelling part of the weekend. But yeah, we'll see if it returns next year. Has MLB announced whether or not they're going to do it again?
I have not seen that. I am sure that anything that will sell them additional jerseys or shirts or shirt jerseys, right, or Yeah, well, I'm sure there will be some permutation of it. Also, the name of it, Players Weekend, I kind of... Was there a board meeting to come up with that? Because isn't every weekend the Players Weekend?
well, the umpires are trying to make every weekend Umpires Weekend, but yeah, you're right. They could have kicked around some other names, I think, or went with something. They should.
I sort of wish they called it maybe Little League Weekend and tied into the Little League World Series more, because the Little League game was on the weekend, right? So
yeah,
have some sort of throwback to Little League for these guys. Maybe a Little League team they played on, or a, you know, a youth team they played on, or I don't know. It just seemed to lack focus, but maybe next year they'll figure it out.
Yeah, the first time's always got some kinks to work. You've always got some kinks to work out. Yeah. Honestly, now just even talking about it, it was pretty much the Rhys Hoskins show all weekend anyway. Now that we're really thinking about it, but this isn't a Phillies podcast, so let's move on.
Okay, well, we'll move on to the one thing in the weekend that was worth possibly remembering for we fans. I guess it was Monday, so not technically on Players Weekend. Kevin Pillar still got it.
He still does, and it's a good thing he does, because his performance at the plate is
hey. Easy.
Not getting any better.
Focus.
You're right. I was actually, speaking of his performance, though, at the plate, he leads the team in doubles, which to me is crazy. But I guess when you have his speed, some of those kind of balls down the line or in the gap, he can stretch into two in ways that the lumbering middle of the order just can't do. But yeah, no. Kevin Pillar, fantastic at defense. That continues to be true. And hopefully, if he's on the team next year, that will continue to be true next year as well.
I feel that full extension type catch is really his trademark. As much as the going up over the wall one was the one that put him on the map, that unbridled, straight out, don't care where the wall or the ground is, catch is really something that not every player can do. So I think that's, you know, it's cool to see. Also, he doesn't die when he does those. I'm still fascinated by his lack of instantly breaking several bones on whatever impact he ends up having.
Yeah, no, he has a pretty strong record of good health for being able to lay out like that. But yeah, he's definitely really comfortable leaving his feet going side to side, and even you'll see him leave his feet to go to dive backwards, which is, I always find those pretty impressive, because to be able to have that kind of depth perception, and like running full tilt like he is, and you know, I've never seen a fly ball or a line drive off the bat of a major league hitter, but I'm guessing it's not spinning exactly and moving exactly the way you'd think it would. And I think his ability to lay out is definitely helping pad those great defensive numbers.
So on that note, I would like to say that if you haven't yet and are on Twitter, look up Kevin Pillar and narcolepsy, because that's actually what's going on. And there's photographic proof of that. Which always gives me a good chuckle when another picture gets added to the sequence of times Kevin Pillar appears to have passed out on the field. We're going to leave you with that, and then we're going to come back with David Artsma right after this. These are the Daves I know. Some of them are Davids, but most of us are Daves. They all have their own hands, but they come from different moms. And we at Artificial Turf Wars are very lucky this week to be joined by former Major League pitcher David Artsma. David, welcome back to the show.
Yes, thank you. Thank you for having me on.
So, glad you could make it on, sort of a last-minute thing. But I had some sad thoughts about this season, and I thought probably the saddest people at this point are the players who are trying to play out the string, as it were. So, my first question... kind of a big question is, when you're on a team, at some point you realize that team's probably not going to win the World Series this season. As an individual, how did you deal with that and trying to get to the end of the season? Did you change your focus to your personal performance or what did you do?
Well, I think it all depends on each individual guy. Having a season like that where you're just, okay, let's just put it plainly, where you suck, where the team just sucks, right? You're not going anywhere. Usually, you know, the trade deadline came around, you got rid of guys, you're not bringing any talent in. You're seeing all your friends who are having good seasons leave, and you're like, oh man, this just sucks. And so you don't really see the light at the end of the tunnel. Like, you're not seeing that, like, yes, all of that work, all that hard work, all that, the fruit of our labors, it's coming up. No, you're already looking at next year and saying, how can I put myself in the best situation for next year? And it all depends on different players. Different players in the clubhouse have different things they're trying to achieve, right? If we take the Blue Jays, for example, and you're looking at like Jose Bautista or Stroman, they're trying to be leaders. So they're trying to make sure the team doesn't give up. The team at least has the sight where you're not going to be, you're what, 61-71 right now. You're not going to blow the doors open and somehow make first place, but it's, hey, let's not be bottom cellar dwellers. Let's make something out of this season. Let's at least trying to be better than one of the teams. I don't know which one it's going to be because they're all, you know, the entire East is playing well, but we're at least going to try to finish the season strong. And you're trying to be a leader and show guys, like, hey, guys, don't give up. Even though this September we suck, next September we're going to be good. So follow my example, right? Okay, you got those guys. Then you have the guys that are being free agents. So they need to have numbers. They just need numbers. They don't need necessarily wins. They need, you know, home runs or RBIs or whatever it takes, whatever they're trying to do. They just need those numbers, or maybe they're trying to get bonuses. So they're trying to hit those bonuses or whatever. And same thing with arbitration guys. They're trying to just make sure they're making their money for next year, because the Blue Jays, let's be honest, nobody thought the Blue Jays were going to be this bad. So a team like that, you sit there and go, hey, we're the whole core is all going to be here. We could still be really good. No one's really out of this core group of guys is leaving. So we still have an opportunity next year. And then you look at the young guys. The young guys are just trying to make a name for themselves. Say, hey, like, look at me. I'm getting a September call-up. If I put up a good 100 at bats or whatever, 50 at bats or 10 appearances, I might have a chance next year to start opening day, be on that roster. So each guy at this point, you just be honest and just say, we're playing for ourselves. And within there, let's keep making sure we're going down this right road where we're ending strong, so we can all be here next year and the team actually believe in us. Cause let's be honest, if the Blue Jays end the end of the year winning 20 out of the last 30, everyone's going to say, hey, look at that. We might be a better team than we thought.
So I'm curious about, the, you know, there's obviously guys who were on the team all year. They have roles that people look to them to make the certain noises at certain times. For a guy like, say, Nori Aoki, who came into a situation where he was clearly moved, not, you know, he was not the primary reason for a deal. Is it awkward for some of those players to sort of try and find a spot on a team that maybe really doesn't have a spot for them?
Yeah, that's the weird spot. That's the hard spot where if you're one of those players, you know, you don't know who you are with that team. And you look around, you say, like, well, where do I really fit? But at the end of the day, then you're playing for, you know, 29 other teams. And so you have to at least try to put in as many good at bats for, in Aoki's case, I know they gave him his release, but you try to do what you can when you get moved over to at least make an impact in the opportunities that you get. At least try to play because that team doesn't like you or doesn't want you anymore, you have a chance to play for other teams. And you know, he still hit what, 281. 280, something like that. Uh-huh. You know, so you're trying to give yourself a chance.
Very much an individual sort of thing.
Yes, absolutely. It's each individual situation, because at the end of the day, too, you don't ever want to put yourself and tell yourself you know what the GM's trying to do. Because when you're a player, you have no clue what the GM's trying to do. Think about how many times you sit back as fans, and you guys, I'm sure, are analyzing the game left and right. You're taking the Blue Jays roster and chewing it up, spitting it out, trying to figure out where guys are going to fit, where the organization's going to go, all the young prospects are going to be, and who's going to come up and fill those spots. As players, it's hard not to do that too. It's easy to do that. It's really simple to do that. But you can't, because how many times when you're doing that, you see the GM do something completely opposite. And so as a player, you can't sit there and say, I know what the GM's going to do. I don't fit here. You say, no, I'm going to make sure I fit. I'm going to do what I can to fit. And if they, for some reason, don't have a spot for me, then I put up my numbers for my next team. Because I'll tell you this, it makes a big difference, the fact that even that you're playing in the big leagues versus taking your out or getting your release and sitting there at home maybe for all of September, and next year trying to fight your way onto a team. A lot of teams don't like that. A lot of teams don't like that look, and you're usually on the outside looking in versus just being on a big league team, even if you're not playing as much as you should be.
Mm-hmm. And David, speaking of not playing as much as you should be, one of the reasons the Jays have struggled so much this year is so many of their better players have been injured. And as a player, we just wanted to get your take on what it's like when you are injured and you're not able to play and you're missing out, and like what goes through a player's head when that happens, and how do you kind of like best spend your time and your days to kind of make sure that doesn't, I don't know, seep into your psychology or whatever while you can't help the team?
No, and I understand what you're saying. But it's also hard to decipher that, because a lot of times it depends on the injury, right? If you're Schultz and you're having, you know, Tommy John, you're sitting there and you have your every day you're doing it is the most boring, grinding rehab ever, because there's so many little things you do that are just so simplistic, and it's so every day you're doing the same stupid thing, tiny little movements. Oh my god. And it's mentally just draining. But you know, like I said earlier, you do see that light at the end of the tunnel, especially with Tommy John's and stuff, because you have a schedule and you know when you're going to be healthy, and you know that when you get done with it, you're going to be healthy, because 95% of all the guys come back and are fine, or at least very close to who they were. So you see that, and you don't even, the team doesn't even matter really to you, because you're rooting for them, you want them to do great, but at the same time, your schedule is so much more advanced than theirs, because you're seeing a year away or 8 months away versus that everyday grind that the players are dealing with. But when you're Russell Martin and you're dealing with, you know, you got 10 days, you got 10 day DL, that's a lot tougher, especially on a team that's struggling. You know, you're showing up every day, you're trying to get ready. You don't know what you're necessarily getting ready for. You know, really, is it just to end the season with some at-bats? Is it just to pat yourself on the back to say you got healthy when the organization doesn't want to get you hurt and where you're out next year? That's the hard part, is when you're losing and you're trying to come back from an injury, because there's, you know, and the reality is, yeah, what are you really fighting to get back for? And a lot of times it's just to get back pride. Just to be back, to say you're back. And you know, you need to grind, you need to work every single day and focus on that end result. But you know, at this point you got 30 days left, you know, 35 days left, and you go get healthy and you're ready for the last 10 days of the season. Well, you're 30 games back. It's tough, man. It's really tough. But it kind of goes back to the roles. If you're Russell Martin, you got to make sure that you're a leader on the team, like, you know, or Troy Tulowitzki, if you're on the 60-day DL, that if you're there every day, you're the guy showing them, guys, like, I'm hurt, I'm coming back, I'm doing this every single day. So when you get to this point, this is how you're supposed to act too. This, you know, Russell Martin needs to show guys, it doesn't matter if you're 30 games back, I can be healthy and I'm going to work my butt off to show you guys when you get hurt, this is how you're supposed to act.
So when you were at one point injured, do you ever remember a time where you either watched, caught a part of a game on TV or looked at a box score and thought, man, that was my inning, or I should be in the bullpen. He should be calling for me right now to get this guy out.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. Oh, it's so frustrating. It's heartbreaking. It's frustrating. It's maddening. You're just like, oh, when I got hurt in 2010, at the very end of the season, 2010, I hurt my left hip. I ended up having surgery on it in January. Hopefully, I wish I would have had it in September when I actually hurt it, but we had it in January. And then on my rehab assignment, I tore my elbow, so I had Tommy John. Well, I'm sitting there watching Brandon League, you know, Toronto guy, close for the Mariners and taking my saves, taking my, you know, every time he's shaking hands at the end of the game, that should be me. And it is just grueling inside. It's tearing me apart. And then I see, and to take this a step further, and nothing against Brandon, because Brandon went and did his job and did it very, very well at the Mariners. He goes out and gets a 3-year, $21 million contract because he was the closer for the Mariners and did well. And I look at, and I, you know, I don't do it really this day, but at the time, especially, you look at it and say, if I was healthy, if I would have had the surgery earlier, those would have been my innings, those would have been my saves, and that would have been my contract. And you look back, and there's nothing you can do about it, nothing I could have really done about it at the time. But yeah, it is grueling to see somebody do your job and to do it well and to have a lot of success on that back end is a roller coaster of emotions.
For sure.
And David, just kind of moving on to kind of baseball in general right now, it seems like this year, particularly in the majors, there's been a big spike in the amount of home runs that are being hit. There's been a lot of talk about the baseball and the stitches on the ball, and, you know, more pitchers are suffering blisters this year, and some people are believing that that's correlated to the new stitching. And I was just curious, as a pitcher, your take on kind of this new baseball and what you think is going on and how to best move forward.
Well, there's no doubt. I 100% believe that the ball is juiced. There's this no doubt. We are hitting home runs at just a crazy rate. I do also believe it's a result of changes in hitting styles. I think hitters are trying to, obviously, we talk about it all the time, launch angle, launch angle, launch angle, launch angle. And, you know, which is, I think, is kind of stupid, because it's actually the exit velocity, which is way more important, right? It depends. Mm-hmm. If the guy hits the ball hard and he hits it as a line drive, it's probably going to have something good happen. And every time in the cage, I'm sure you guys have seen a million batting practices. Guys are trying to work on a very specific angle even long before we ever knew about launch angle. They're trying to hit the ball, you know, there, because you hit it a little higher, it's a pop-up. You hit it a little lower, it's a, you know, it's a ground ball. You hit it in the sweet spot. We've always known it. We just never had a number or something to call it. And so all of a sudden, everyone go, oh, launch angle, we're working on launch angle, it's a brand new thing. No, it's not. It's something that's been around. We just didn't have a name for it. It's like spin rate. Well, we sit there and go, God, that curveball's tight. Okay, well, what does height mean? It spins faster and harder than the next guy. Well, now we have something, an analytical way of quantifying it, right?
I think the launch angle thing, maybe there's a certain breed of coach who insisted at one time that a fast guy should pound the ball or swing down on the ball to get it on the ground, to get it through the infield, to leg it out, that sort of thing. And that was the real thing that went in the garbage after we started looking at what the real results were, even for fast guys when they hit the baseball. But yeah, intuitively, get it on the sweet spot and you're going to be in a better spot overall.
Well, what it is too is we look at fast guys and but I think it's also, there's a second equation on that when you look at fast guys. I mean, not to go off on this tangent, but fast guys generally don't have the power, the power that is going to be make them a 40 home run hitter. And so it was the idea of, okay, let's focus on lowering that launch angle and making it more line drives that are going to be more advantageous to working for you. you know, when we take Giancarlo Stanton and we try to apply the same thing to him to Goins, it's not really going to apply the same way, right? They're just not the same hitter, but we can't apply the same type of thing. But this year, when you look at, to go back to what we were talking about, the home run rate just skyrocketing. You know, you look at 2010, the home run rate was less than a home run per game, and now it's 1.26 a game. These are steroid era numbers that are coming back, but we're testing more. We're testing more than we ever tested in this game. Hitters don't make adjustments that quickly in. You can look at the whole course of Major League Baseball over the life of it. People don't make adjustments this fast. Even if we're talking about the home run, trying to increase hitting the ball hard, increase the perfect angle, you don't just automatically make a switch this fast, especially over the last 7 years. Something has to be there. Major League Baseball swears, and they do their own testing. They tell us behind closed doors within their own testing the ball's the same. Okay, let's trust that, right? That's the ball. Yeah, the ball wasn't deflated either. Okay, so you know, like let's look at it for what it is. When the average player is hitting more home runs, when the best player is hitting more home runs, when the nine hole on your lineup is hitting more home runs, something has happened, especially with certain guys that are hitting more home runs than they've ever hit and haven't really changed their approach.
So in that vein, do you think, though, that it was on purpose, or do you think that maybe something happened with the manufacturer of the baseball and they don't want to admit that they don't have control of it rather than than some other way?
I think that would be, like, in an ideal world, that sounds right. Like, that could actually happen in manufacturing, right? But I don't think in reality something happens to the baseball without Major League Baseball knowing it. And I think... When you look at the numbers and you can see it happened, the change happened. It was the All-Star break, I think 3 years ago.
2015.
Right when the numbers,
yeah.
2015, yeah. Right when the numbers started changing. That doesn't happen. And especially halfway through the season, that perfect timing, right when people after the All-Star game, okay, people are kind of borderline baseball because football is beginning to creep back into the system. You hear baseball, that's when baseball starts losing its little drive because it's middle season. You know, teams are starting to get out of it. The teams that are in it, yes, you keep that fan base. But how do you keep people back in the game? What saved baseball back in 1998? The home run. They want it back. And that's how you get it back, especially when pitchers are dominating the game. You get it back by giving the hitters a little bit of an edge. And at the same time, I think Rob Manfred trying to get the strike zone a little smaller definitely helps too. There's a lot of different changes that have happened at the same time that really go towards it. And I, without a doubt, I think the ball is one of them.
So you heard it here first. David Artsma believes that chicks dig the long ball, and so does MLB, whoever they are.
Without a doubt, if Greg Maddux and Tom Glavin were back, they'd be dropping some bombs. They know what the girls want.
Oh my goodness! So you have you've been on our podcast a couple of times. I'd like to believe that we gave you the podcast bug, and you decided to start your own because of the fun you had with us. Is that true?
Without a doubt, I didn't want to admit it. I've been trying not to admit this for years, but yes, you guys drove me towards podcasts.
Where can we find you? The Bullpen with DA, it's called?
The Bullpen with DA. I started a podcast with my buddy. I'm sure just like you guys that we're just talking baseball and we were having a good time talking baseball. He hated text messaging, so he'd always call me. I thought it was the most annoying thing in the world, but he'd call me. And then we just start talk baseball for half an hour, an hour. My wife got sick of it, told us to start recording it. So so we did. And the Bullpen with DA, we've had some great guests. This last week we had Tommy John, Joe Kelly the week before. And so it's been a lot of fun. And you can find us on TuneIn Radio, iTunes, SoundCloud, all the fun stuff.
All right, folks, you are allowed to now have a second favorite podcast, The Bullpen with DA.
We talk less Blue Jays, but come find us.
I believe there are a lot of baseball fans who listen in on this in general. So always good to talk to you, David. Appreciate that you squeezed this into your schedule. And again, I hope we get a chance to talk to you again soon. And you have yourself a fine evening.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on.
All right. Take care. And that was the wonderful David Ardsma. As always, pushing a small conspiracy theory. Maybe he doesn't always do that. Maybe that's always candid. How about that?
Yeah, that works.
All right. And we get candid around here when we answer your questions. And of course, before we do that, I have to do this.
Time now to hear from our listeners.
That just seems silly.
Here are the rules. First, I ask a question, then you ask a question.
Now, how does that sound, sweetheart?
Could you repeat the question, please?
Usually we only read them once, I think, is the way it works. we'll start light from at @baseballher. Ballher, is Nick trying to take Joshua's job? Do you think she's upset about that? Or?
She should be. If it were true, but I can tell you assuredly it is not true. When the Blue Jays are playing like this, I can assure you nobody's trying to take Josh's job. I promise.
Let Josh talk about them all and just step back if you can. But but we cannot step back. We must step forward. I would never let Nick take Josh's job. That's crazy talk. And as we know, I'm all perfectly in charge of everything around here. If you've seen me attempt to play audio files, you know how well that usually goes. Quinn Sweetser at Quinn Sweetser QJGS. What percent chance would you give Ryan Borucki of starting a game for the Jays in September? Let us prove that Josh has not really left the podcast. He sent us an answer to this question. Would you provide it for that? Provide that for us, Mr. Nick.
Yes, so Josh wanted us all to know that Borucki will likely make a start at AAA before the AAA season ends, and he's been promoted because he's been so dominant at AA. At AA, he's got a 5.25 strikeout to walk rate. He is on the Jays 40-man roster, so it's definitely possible that he'll be up with the big club in September, and he could make a start depending on how long Anderson and Kohler stay in the rotation.
Man, we didn't even talk about Kohler, did we, in the first half of the show?
No, we didn't. Oh, also with Ryan Borucki, Josh also wanted us to mention that Marco Estrada is amazing and he loves him very much.
That was really in his Ryan Borucki comment, was it?
Oh, interesting. It was. When Josh isn't here, he needs to make sure that gets in there some way or another.
We haven't even had a major league reference this week. We're slipping. At Split Letters, Luke asks, can we petition the MLB for the addition of a designated thrower rule, asking for a friend? Montero.
Yeah, so I guess if anybody wasn't watching the game tonight, there were about 5 stolen bases, I believe, against the Jays. But you know what? We knew what we were getting when we acquired Montero. And I think this is par for the you don't want your backup catcher hitting 190 course, I think. You got to get to give in the world of backup catchers. And it's just it's a tough position to fill well. And everybody lacks at something, so unfortunately, this is where we're at.
Do you know what they call a backup catcher with a full skill set?
A starting catcher?
Yeah, it's funny that.
Yeah, and if they're really good at hitting, they call them a first baseman.
It's amazing. It's amazing the things that happen to catchers. I mean, we farmed our one catcher out to third base, did we not?
Oh yeah, I want to see more of that in September if Russ comes back.
Well, I mean, obviously, Tulo's not coming back, so you put Russ at third. You keep him on the field. You get Josh at short.
That's right.
Then you get Jose catching. Isn't that how that works? I think there's...
He's got a good arm. We could do it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. If you want a guy who can throw, you put Jose behind the plate.
Yeah.
Oh, next question. At Philly G, Phil Golubovich asks, which low-risk type player do you see the Jays bringing back next year? Like Barney, Montero, Anderson, Kohler? Or is there someone you think that they should go and get?
Right. So in terms of bringing guys back, I think they're going to try to bring back as many pitchers as they can. This year, it was pretty clear that the Jays' starting depth was lacking. So if Kohler is arbitration eligible, so my guess would be that they wouldn't go to arbitration with him, and they try to work out a deal so he avoids arbitration, and they can probably save a little bit of money in the process. But I'm thinking he's likely back. Anderson, like we were talking about earlier, they'll have to negotiate with him, and every other team's going to be in on him. But I wouldn't be surprised if he's back. I don't think they'll bring both Goins and Barney back. I think with Lourdes Gurriel being a bit closer to the majors, and everybody seeing what it looks like when Goins and Barney both start at the same time, I think they might part ways with one of them. And in terms of players that would be interesting additions, Eduardo Nunez is a free agent. He's with the Red Sox now. He can play in the middle infield. He's got a little bit of speed. He's got good contact skills as well. He'd be an interesting guy to me. That's kind of not going to be really expensive. Another guy that might not cost a ton is Cameron Maben. And he could help in the outfield, depending on how far along the Jays think all their young outfielders are. And a couple other guys I kind of had my eye on were Jonathan Villar with the Brewers. Now, he's not a free agent, but he's basically been relegated to the bench in Milwaukee with kind of Oswaldo Arcia playing well. And he's really struggled this year. And he might be an interesting buy-low candidate. He's fast. He's got some good on-base skills, but he also has a lot of swing and miss in his game. And he can play short and second. So those are some guys I'd be interested in looking at.
That is a very complete answer to which I have nothing to add. So I'm going to ask the next question.
I love wish casting for rosters. It's my favorite. It's why I love fantasy baseball.
I can tell it's got you stoked, which is cool. Everybody has something that gets them going in the hot stove season, as it were. Blue Jay Way at Blue Jay Way 1 asks, is Donaldson a Blue Jay opening day 2018? Yes, no.
I think so. You know, there's always a chance he gets traded, but I think it's fairly small. And I think if he does get traded, it's going to be one of those kind of offers you can't refuse situations where we'll all be pretty satisfied with what's coming back. But I think in all likelihood, he's back here on opening day. What do you think?
I feel like he is back only because the Blue Jays are going to be, I think, asking for major league talent back. I don't think they're prepared to go rebuild, and I don't think there's anybody who's going to offer up major league talent back for Josh Donaldson other than maybe the Red Sox, and they're not going to trade with the Red Sox because gosh knows the Red Sox need a third baseman. perpetually, apparently.
Hey, Rafael Devers is looking pretty good so far.
Maybe. But didn't Will Middlebrooks look good a couple years ago?
That's very true. Yeah.
It's a strange thing. Lou Brown, 34. There is our one fleeting reference to Major League. Josh. Wedding picture or something. Name the 5 J players you would want with you in a bench brawl. In honor, presumably, of the ridiculous fisticuffs between the Yankees and Tigers this week.
Tigers. Yeah. All right. Definitely Frank Thomas. I think that's pretty obvious.
Frank Thomas is about 50 years old, isn't he?
Oh, on the current roster.
Well, he doesn't specify.
Yeah. Okay. Well, because he doesn't, what do we want to go with answer wise?
You give your all time 5 and I will give the current 5. How about that?
Okay, definitely Frank Thomas. All right. I think Roger Clemens. He's one of those do anything to win type people. He's also brick house. Justin Smoak has like that long reach, I think, which would be good in a fight. I've heard. Eric,
never been in a fight, but
yeah, Eric Hinsky, he'd be good. And you know what? I'm gonna go with Ryan Goines, because anyone who's stayed on a major league roster with his hitting ability as long as he has some pretty decent survival skills, I think.
Someone must be afraid of him on some level, is what you're saying.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting theory. So the current five Blue Jays I would want Josh Donaldson, just because he could flip his hair in the fight, and you want that. I want Troy Tulowitzki, because he wishes you would, and you can tell he wishes you would, and if you do, come at you. Kevin Pillar, because he doesn't seem to get injured no matter what he does, so throwing his body around in a fight, that's fine. Marcus Stroman, because height does not measure anything, apparently. I figure he could hit pretty hard. He looks like a guy, his dad. Can I pick Marcus Stroman's dad?
Oh, yeah. I feel like Marcus Stroman's dad could take on a whole major league team. He is massive.
We need somebody, maybe. Do we need somebody from the bullpen? I know I wouldn't want Ezekiel Carrera insert arm length joke here.
Yeah,
I think Justin Smoke's going to be the common one there, because I do believe Reach has something to do with that. Maybe leverage or something.
Yeah. Who in the bullpen would be good?
Bearded white guy.
Yeah. Take your pick. Yeah. Actually, they would be good, because if anybody got in trouble, they wouldn't know who it was,
you
right?
Just point to the other guy.
Yeah. Be like, is the bearded white guy from the Jays bullpen. And they could never narrow it down.
They try and suspend somebody. They have to go to the video to figure out who it was, and then he's wearing somebody else's shirt. It'd be perfect. You're right. Yeah. And then the last thing, we have a rules question. Colleen Evans asks, why not consistent? JD hits a two-run double down the line, reviewed, deemed foul. Then Pierce hits one that's called foul but is not reviewable. She feels that is so 2017. There are a lot of things that are so 2017, but I don't think that this is one of them.
Yes, I agree.
So JD's double was a long fly ball that hit and made contact on the foul or outside of the foul line way down the line.
Correct.
And we believe that the one she's talking about with Pierce actually passed over or... It hit on a bounce before first base or third base, and then the determination was, did it pass over the bag in fair territory?
Right, yeah. With Pierce's ball, I think the argument was that it hit first and it passed over fair ground, or some part of the third base bag, which would make it then a fair ball, I believe, on that line of argumentation, which... the umps didn't get or didn't agree with.
So the I don't understand why the replay rules are limited the way they are. I'm like, you can review anything, man. If you can review a hit by pitch, which apparently you can, why the heck wouldn't you be able to review anything else?
Oh, agreed. Yeah,
but
I don't know why
MLB doesn't agree with us. And their determination is anything fair or foul between home plate and first or third base is non-reviewable and within the purview usually of the home plate umpire. Though in this case, I'm sure the call was made by the third base umpire third base ump. That's just the way it goes. Some things in certain zones are reviewable, other ones are not. I wish we had a better explanation, but there is a rule. It's not just the Jays are cursed.
Yeah.
We did have a do-over to hand out because, well, every week somebody does something stupid.
Oh my God, did he really just say that?
But we can try again, right?
You talking about a do-over, baby? Are you talking about a f***ing do-over?
We believe in second chances.
Yes, we do believe in second chances. Even though nobody ever seems to come on the show and actually take their second chance, we keep handing them out. This week's second chance goes to the Texas Rangers.
So the Texas Rangers, who were scheduled to play in Houston this week against the Astros, obviously were not able to play in Houston because of Hurricane Harvey. And instead of agreeing to switch series with the Astros, because the Texas has a home series with the Astros scheduled for late September, and the Astros propose what they do is basically switch. So Houston would play in Texas this week as a home series, and then Texas would come to Houston in late September. Texas said no. They said they weren't going to switch, even though there was a GD hurricane in Houston this week. I remembered not to swear too.
Yeah, you swore earlier, but the beat machine will come out.
For what?
Yeah. Maybe I'll send you a clip.
I'm sorry, but anyway, Texas, what are you doing? Just switch. It could have been so easy. It could have been so simple. It's the right thing to do, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah,
and it's a hurricane.
The Houston Texans are being allowed by the Dallas Cowboys currently to practice in the preseason on their field. So, you know, it's not impossible, folks. I understand it would be awkward, but maybe we should have put awkward to the side because, as you said, it's a freaking hurricane. Yeah. So if John Daniels would like to come on and reverse the position and apologize, then certainly we'd never mention it again, would we?
Well, there's a lot he's going to have to apologize for on this show.
Rafi Udur, I'm sure, would be part of the apology. We do also have a unusual gold star to hand out.
I think that's rather brilliant.
So I did good, right?
I mean, I would have thought you'd get a gold star.
You enjoy that. You've earned it.
So right up there, I'm going to ask you if you're going to get our gold star this week. Nick, are you watching entire games faithfully?
I'm trying to. My schedule generally prohibits me from being able to watch from start to finish. I'm a lot of given we tour and stuff, it's a lot of like pop out after sound check and go to a bar and, you know, ask them to turn it on for four innings. And I just say ask them to turn it on because usually we're not in Blue Jay friendly country. But I'd say I'm not watching full games, but if I'm giving full disclosure, I'm not always able to watch full games anyway. But I'm trying to watch as much as I can. With Josh Donaldson at shortstop and all these other kind of like fun, interesting things happening. The kind of the porous backup catchers. I've been trying to watch, but no,
you're watching out of morbid curiosity. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, it's kind of like an interesting, like, what's going to happen next kind of vibe to the season right now. But no, I'm not the person that we should be giving the gold stars to.
No, because there are people right now every night tuning in the first inning and not tuning out until the ninth, despite all evidence to the contrary that it's going to turn out well. And especially after a 1-5 week, I would like to say to those people, you get a gold star. I would like to also offer them 50 points, but the points cannot be redeemed for anything. But, you know, like fake internet points are always good for something, pride, whichever.
It's to the people who are watching Kyle Gibson mow down the Jays in the middle innings on the weekend. You're the real 2017 MVPs.
Yeah. If you gave up your Saturday afternoon to sit inside and watch that happen on television, mad respect, because I'm not at that point right now. So, much love. Before I talk about Patreon, I will ask you if you have a final thought this week, Nick.
I hate to bring him up again and again, but Joey Votto.
I was just gonna say, it's gonna be Joey Votto, isn't it?
Yeah. Was it? He took an 0-for-0, 43 pitch, 5 walk game on Sunday. It was amazing. We were traveling on Sunday, and I was following, like, just looking at the box scores, and I saw Jameson Taillon pitched 4 4 2/3 innings without giving up a run. And I immediately assumed he got taken out of the game hurt or something. And then I went on Twitter and I realized it was because Joey Votto was working him for 20 pitch walks his first two times to the plate.
Joey Votto gets hates outs.
More entertaining. He gets more entertaining every single day. I can't get enough.
All right, well, bring Votto to Toronto. That's what I say. Why? I mean, if anybody, you're going to trade anybody for Josh Donaldson. Joey Votto and a pitcher for Josh Donaldson. Who says no?
Oh, yeah, I do it. I do it right away.
Of course you would. So, we have a Patreon. Now, I'm going to make this pitch. I haven't made this pitch yet. You're probably not going to purchase Jay's tickets for the rest of the season. I'm just guessing. If you haven't already. But you probably are going to listen to us every week if you're already listening right now. So for far less than the cost of a Jays ticket, you could be our patron and have a fun bonus like coming on to play a game with us if you commit to the appropriate donation level. So at www.patreon.com/turfpod, there's all kinds of information about how you could do that and not spend your hard-earned dollars on a seat for a losing effort, but instead spend them on making the podcast more fun and higher quality. If that's possible to be higher quality than you, Nick, I'm not sure.
I don't know about that, Josh. Oh, my God. I'm so sorry.
Well,
so
that's the last time we have to have Nick on. But...
I was just trying to think about the lowest quality thing I could say.
Oh gosh. Now Josh is gonna fire you. Oh my goodness. Wow, what a weird note to end on there. In that respect, I would have to say I have been Greg Wisniewski, and you have been Nick Dyka. Of course you can get me on the Twitter at CoolHead2010 and you at Nick Dyka. Our guest was David Ardsma at the DA53. Also of the Bullpen with DA podcast. Check that out. This has been episode number 72 of Artificial Turf Wars, and we will see you next week.